What's up, everybody? Welcome to SWAT MMA, where we're smoking weed and we're talking mixed martial arts. This is episode number 120. I'm Jared here with Paul.
What up?
Coming to you from Las Vegas, Nevada. Today we're going to be smoking and talking all about the results of UFC 269. We're going to take a look ahead to the final UFC fight night of the year, headlined by fan favorite Derek Lewis. And we're going to take a deep dive into the very first BKFC Thailand, entitled The Game Changer. Before we dive into the combat sports, though, you know what time it is. Grab your weed, fire it up, and let's get into the weed of the week.
Smoke weed every day.
Word. Hope you're smoking on something good out there as well, folks. Today we got a brand new strain for the show that Paul is passing me in this joint right here. We got some Mac, or Miracle Alien Cookies. This is a brand new one for us on the show. Before I get into the genetics, what are your initial thoughts, Paul?
I like it. It burns nice. It's got a good taste, too.
It is. It's real smooth.
It's not harsh at all.
There's quite a handful of genetics behind Miracle Alien Cookies. It's a hybrid. It's about a 50-50 mix, and it's a three-way cross of Alien Cookies, Starfighter, and Colombian Gold. If we dive into those a little bit, Alien Cookies is a cross of Girl Scout Cookies, no surprise there, and Alien Dog. Starfighter is a really rare strain to come across. It's Alien Tahoe OG crossed with Lemon Alien Dog. So we've got a lot of Chem Dog roots in here too. And then the third one in there, which I think is really what makes this weed special, is it's got Colombian Gold, which is one of the oldest original sativas. It's a Landrace sativa. It's still available. Like, if you were smoking weed in the 60s, you were probably smoking some fucking Colombian Gold. And to still be able to have it now is one of the original sativa strains out there. I get excited when I see it in genetics. It's really, really, really cerebral, uplifting sativa. And I think it gives it this nice little pop that this weed has got.
Yeah, this weed's got some pretty good terps in it, too.
We also have some concentrates on the show.
Yeah, we got some JMO. Yeah, we got some JMO made by Aether Gardens. It's an indica-dominant hybrid. So we got the sauce and the diamonds version of it. And it's a cross between jelly breath and GMO cookies, which is garlic cookies. Same thing. You know what I mean?
Excellent.
Yep.
Very, very terpy stuff. Very nice smelling. Did you hit this?
Right. Yes, sir.
Let's save this the puff coat till later in the show, because that shit always makes me cough.
Yeah, you're going down.
I know, right? I'll try to take a smaller hit, but then people watch me on YouTube and they clown me for taking tiny little hits.
That's because you're a clown, fool.
I don't know. My lungs are not good with all this cannabis. I should really take a break.
No, you shouldn't. But it's cool.
It is what it is. And these are Binsky.
Yeah.
Concentrates. You know, I've reviewed some of his, I guess it's not his technically, it's just branded as shit, but his chocolate bars on the Las Vegas Marijuana channel. And those were fun too. They you got these at MedMen, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I got those from MedMen too. I used
to
review
like
some crazy stuff for them.
Artistic. Like
yeah, the box is just like I still have the wrapper actually from the candy bar, because it's got a bunch of his artwork inside of it that was really cool.
That's a cool little like saying on the inside too.
Yeah, and then it's got like little quotes from him and bits of his artwork in there.
Yeah.
That's cool.
It's got tell there's a lot that goes into these little boxes.
That's the downside of that is you also know you wind up paying for that too, but you're always gonna pay for
these. These are actually not that bad. Those are only $30.
That's not bad pre-tax.
Uh-huh. Yeah. That's pretty solid.
For half grams?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, that's not bad. Dispensary-wise. Vegas prices.
Yeah.
There might be people in other states listening to that going, what? All right, well, Paul, let's keep this going. And let's dive right into, I'd like to get started with the final UFC pay-per-view, which is UFC 269.
I'd like to take a second real quick and tell every motherfucker in the world, I told you so.
I was going to say, there's something you want to say about that, because you made some predictions on the last episode about three particular fighters that you thought were going to win, and you put your money where your mouth is doing a parlay on that too, didn't you?
Yeah, I threw that in a little $15 parlay, won me $500 out the
door. Tell everybody who the fighters were.
Oh, yeah, I took Charles Oliveira to upset Poirier, and I took my girl Juliana Pena to upset Nunes, and then I took Kyra France to upset Garbrandt.
And for those listening who might not know what a parlay is, you're picking all three fights. Like, all three of those fights have to come in for you to win.
Yeah.
And that paid out rather sporty.
Yeah, it did. Holy shit.
That's a nice thing.
Well, that freaking Juliana Pena alone was plus 650.
Right. And it was unusual to see, you know, the champion in Charles Oliveira being an underdog to Dustin Poirier.
Yeah, but like I was telling you last week, too, I just felt like it was too much of a, like, this whole ceremony of, like, Dustin Poirier was like, oh, this is his moment. Mm-hmm. Like, the betting odds were that way. Everything was that way. And I was just like, it just felt off, you know?
It was an eventful card. And congratulations on making a nice call and a nice, nice payout here. And let's talk a little bit. I'd like to save those top tier fights though for a little while and start kind of near the bottom of the card.
Yeah,
we did have too many to go through fight by fight. However, I thought there were some real standouts.
Yeah.
He's a pretty big name and he's not in the prelims. But let's talk about Sean O'Malley for a minute because it's going to be a short conversation. I mean, everybody looked at his fight.
I was being a doubter last week too.
Against Hulan is a
big test.
A big test. I did too. Yeah. I was like, man, he best be careful. This kid could fuck him up. You know?
Yeah.
And O'Malley came out and did his thing and TKOs him in the first round convincingly.
Yeah, he worked.
Like,
yep.
Sean is so, he's so lanky, for lack of a better term, for that division. He's 5'10".
Yeah,
he doesn't look like he's powerful. He's not a very muscular guy. He couldn't be with that big of a frame. Fighting at 135, and he's fighting a flyweight, former flyweight. But I didn't think that was going to really come into effect until I saw him in the cage and realized just how much bigger Sean was.
Yeah.
And when he started firing those straight 1-2s, I mean,
there was nothing he could do.
And then he gets
couldn't even get close to him. It was like literally what was happening.
He gets Paiva up against the cage, and not only did he tee off on him, but he teed off him very intelligently. I mean, he was mixing upstairs and downstairs punches. He's throwing uppercuts, hooks to the body, then right back upstairs to the head.
That's one thing that O'Malley's always done that's, like, I feel like separated him is he likes to, like, mix up, like, the body to head, and, like, that's how you break somebody down.
Yes,
you know
that's
what
boxers understand and know.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that a lot of MMA fighters who aren't boxers tend to overlook. Is this easy to get head hunting, especially when you can kick to the body and other things in MMA and knee to the body? You might not think so much about punching to the body, but he looked really, really, really good up against the cage in that finishing sequence. And I thought his shot selection showed really superior fight IQ, frankly. It's really easy to just, well, I complain about it a lot. How many times, Paul, do we see fighters in that position who just stand there and they throw left and right hooks back and forth? They just wing hooks. And that's actually fairly easy to defend against and leaves yourself open.
Yeah,
so you get somebody that shells up, and they're not taking as much damage as if you would simply mix your shot selection up. Or, my God, slip an uppercut in there when they're all shelled up.
Well, not only that, when they're all dazed like that, if you start ripping them to the body, they're going to drop their hands naturally, and then those shots that you want to hit to the top are going to land.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's like, that, like you were saying, it's the intelligence of, like, knowing. You know who does that, like, probably the best ever in the UFC, I think, is probably like Jose Aldo. It's like perfect example of, like, you know, people, if you look at how that style works in mixed martial arts, like, he's literally the perfect example. That was his MO for years. And I feel like that's, like, if Sean keeps that stuff up, dude, like, it's gonna be really hard to beat him at this weight class. Like,
he's a problem.
Yeah.
See, Dana's talking now after the fight about getting him ranked competition, et cetera.
And well, was the last one of his contract, right?
I do believe so. I hope so, because that was the whole point.
Yeah.
And he deserves to get paid. And I would like to see him against higher competition, but I'm down to wait if he has more fights on his contract and he's not going to do it, I mean, as we've discussed and don't need to get into again, but I'm just full support of him refusing higher ranked guys until he's on a better payment contract. I do it.
I just don't understand why the UFC won't just renegotiate, because they've done it with so many people over the years that, like, I don't understand.
I don't think they do it anymore. Because you're right, yeah. They used to under the Fertittas.
Guys would renegotiate their contract in the middle of their contract all the time.
If you're not named Conor McGregor, I just don't think the UFC does that anymore. And I don't think they do it for Conor, frankly, either. Because he's bragging about how he's only got two fights left on his contract, too.
I thought he just signed like a 5-fight deal.
I don't think so, because he was on Twitter this weekend talking about two fights left, baby. Made me wonder if he was bulking up so big because he's going to make a move elsewhere.
Anyways. I don't know.
Back to Sean O'Malley. Looked absolutely amazing. And congratulations on stopping a solid, solid fight.
Yeah. And then I do want to kick it down to the undercard. So, Tai Tuivasa goes in there against Sakai and just gets it done.
Some I knew that highlight was reel. We talked about that last week.
I don't know, though, because Sakai's tough, though. I didn't see him getting KO'd like that. That fucking, he was like flatlined. He was down for a minute. Like, Ty did his whole, like, fucking shooey and everything on the, and that motherfucker was still down.
Yeah, it was 26 seconds in the round, too. He just laid him unconscious.
Yeah, he was done,
Yeah.
But, yeah.
It's funny, the officials tried to stop him with the shooey, and he's like, my fans come here to see two things. Knock out some shooeys, motherfucker.
Dude, did you see that fool who fucking poured beer from the top level down on him when he was walking back in? Like, got in his eyes and shit. He's like, ah. Dude, it's fucking funny.
His fans are a trip. He's another guy that I don't know what his ceiling is. Might not be that high, but he's definitely fun to entertaining to watch. How about the Miranda Maverick versus Aaron Blanchfield fight, which I didn't know anything about Aaron prior to this, and I had figured Miranda Maverick's going to walk through her because she's a hot young prospect. Yeah. I mean, she's a talented young prospect. Mm-hmm. And that was not the case at all. Talk about utter domination from somebody. We saw 46-21 striking differential, and then you add in 7 takedowns.
Yeah, and it was just like a complete domination of every position in the fight, too. Like, even when they were up on the clinch, up on the cage, there was nothing. She had nothing for her. It was utter domination.
It turns out she's from Eddie Bravo's.
Yeah.
Is it from his camp or from his grappling series?
She was in his, like, grappling series and stuff, so you got to think she's top level if she's in there with those kind of people.
Yeah. When you're setting a takedown record.
Yeah.
And I believe that was her first fight in the UFC.
Second?
Well, she's going to be a problem, too. How about Ryan Hall at featherweight? We saw him get a victory with Derek Minner in a fight that we had talked about a bit last week. And
a strange one.
I found that fight very frustrating because I thought Derek Minner was having success on the feet, clearly.
Yeah.
And he kept insisting on falling for a little bit of a trap, but not if you know how Ryan Hall fights. I mean, he would land a big punch and Ryan Hall would kind of fall backwards like he was going
like
down.
Like, he was like drunken master shit. Like, he was like, I'm dazed, come to the ground with me. It's like, I'm going to put you in a leg lock.
And the dude kept doing it.
I could never even tell if he was ever hurt. Like, I never even knew if he was hurt. Like, yeah, some of those punches were big, but I could never really, like, actually see if Ryan Hall was hurt because he just kept doing that the whole fight. Right. He was just like, oh, look, I'm hurt. It's like,
and Minner kept falling him right to the ground, which is, look, he did good on the ground against
him.
Dude,
he took him down,
too.
With
a fucking decision.
Yeah.
But, I mean, meaning that he didn't get subbed.
I guess.
So you could, I guess.
He lost the fight.
Yeah, he loses the fight, but he makes it 3 rounds playing with fire. So, I don't know. I couldn't fathom it. It was really bizarre.
I thought he could have won that fight.
I thought he could have, too. All he had to do was just back off and let Ryan stand up and keep tagging him like that, man.
Yeah.
I mean, instead he insisted on going to the ground with him and didn't need to time and time again. Cost him the fight. But it is fun to watch Ryan Hall just consistently go for these crazy leg locks. That nobody else dives for the legs like that. We just don't see it.
It just doesn't make sense.
So
he doesn't even like dive for the legs though. He does like
he rolls.
He like rolls through,
Or Imanari. I don't even know how you say it because nobody does it except him. So I don't.
Yeah, him and Tony Ferguson are like the only two people who really do it.
How about the Jillian Robertson? Silicosh. I don't know how you say her last name. Some pretty egregious eye gouging going on there.
Jared loves a good eye gouge.
Well, I mean, she gets subbed, rear naked choke. Jillian's got the sub in, right? And she's got her sunk up in the choke. And Olga Priscilla just goes for the thumb and the eye, like, over and over.
Just so blatant, too. Like, not like even Joe Rogan and freaking and DC were like, dude, she's trying to gouge her eye out.
That was the worst thing I've seen since Jingling Lang did that shit. Jingling Lang. But for real, when
that was fucking rough, dude. It she was literally rough. Was just like, ugh.
And look, we can laugh because Jillian's eyes apparently are okay.
Yeah.
But that highlights something that I think.
Playing for keeps.
I think that the UFC, on certain occasions, should take time to dole out fines when people do egregious things like that, similar to how the NFL does.
Yeah.
I would hate to see it abused, but there's just been a few instances when you're so obviously trying to injure a fighter with your finger in their eyeball. Like, it's not a, when I'm not talking about you eye gouge somebody in a strike. Yeah. I mean, what we saw in that fight, or what we saw with Li Jinglang when he was just literally stuck his full finger in the dude's eye, like left it there. Like the ref was trying to get him to pull it out. And he was like, nah, I'm not taking this out of his eye until he lets my neck go. It's not happening. Like, something needs to be done. Like, you can fucking seriously injure somebody and permanently fuck up their life doing this kind of shit. Yeah. Am I wrong? I mean, you're laughing.
I'm laughing because now you explained it. He's like, nah, he's taking this out.
Well, you remember that fight? The ref was like pulling on his hand.
Dude, that's
like,
what the ref was doing in this one too. She kept pulling, he like pulled her hand off, then she did it again. Yeah, he pulled like, her no, hand I'm off. Gonna stick,
again. You're going to release my neck.
She's playing for keeps, homie. She's like, I guess I'll tap.
I don't like it.
Yeah, I didn't either. It was rough. It was real rough.
I mean, it's all funny until somebody literally can't see you. You wind up like Bisbing, but it's not, you know, it's the result of intentional eye gouging, not even accidental eye poking.
Yeah.
Those are two different worlds, when you're eye gouging and when you're accidentally eye poking.
Mm-hmm. That's literally two complete different things. Yeah, that was rough, though. My bad. I had to look up this guy's name just because he's a fucking savage, but I forgot his name.
Do you remember in the very early UFCs, it was Keith Hackney was a fighter. And that was when they allowed groin strikes.
Yeah.
I can't remember exactly who he was fighting. But, like, he was dead. The dude's groin was open, and they were on the ground. And he punched him, like, 18 times in the nuts in a row until the dude was like, that's it, I'm tired. It's like comparing that with, like, I need, you know, you need somebody in the balls on accident when you're trying to get their stomach.
Yeah.
This whole different world.
All right. I looked up the guy's name. Andre Muniz. That dude is a fucking problem, bro. He is a problem. He tapped out Eric Anders.
Eric Anders, yeah. He did that.
He's a problem.
And he fucked up
He also ended Jacare's career. Like, come on.
And he did the exact same move on Anders.
If Anders didn't tap, it was going to happen again, too. Because the way he has that, like, all your weight.
Armbar.
Yeah, well, the way, because he was, like, on the side. So, like, all your weight is, like, added into it also. So, it's like, he could have snapped his arm so easy. Bro, that's what's crazy, too. Like, he didn't snap Jacare's, like lower part, like, his forearm. Dude, he snapped, like, the top of his arm.
Right.
Like, that's fucking nuts.
Yeah, he picks up the victory at 313 of round one as a middleweight bout with that arm bar. Mm-hmm. And thank God Eric tapped. I mean, my God.
Yeah,
that was nasty.
But yeah, that's two in a row. This dude is a problem. Yeah. He's a problem. That's what I like about these bigger UFC, like the bigger like pay-per-view cards when you have these like a lot more fights. Mm-hmm. I feel like you get guys like this where like maybe he sometimes flies under the radar. But now, like, I'm always going to remember this motherfucker because of, like, those two submissions. He's gonna be a problem because he's a middleweight, and middleweight is striker land. And if you've got good jiu-jitsu, he might be able to neutralize a lot of these guys.
Yeah, and Jacare, his jiu-jitsu is, we don't need to mention that, but his striking has actually improved quite a bit over the latter half of his career.
Uh-huh.
And so has Eric Anderson's decent striking too, and these guys just couldn't get nothing off. Anderson landed two punches, and that was it. It was over and done with. He had two takedowns, two sub attempts, and that was it. Armbar sunk, and it's over.
So here's the thing now. So after two big wins like that with Jacare and Anders, I think he might even be in line for a ranked opponent at this point.
I would say you have to be.
Those are two big wins.
Because it kind of shows that the Jacare wasn't just a fluke thing.
Yeah.
Even though Anders and him aren't comparable on skill levels.
I thought it was weird. Yeah.
But still, it's a UFC fighter in a middleweight division. And he's deadly.
Yeah, so I think he might be in line for a ranked opponent next.
I'd like to see
it. I'll be there for it.
You know, give him somebody in the bottom, 12, bottom 13, rung. 14, 15, yeah. Right in there. See what happens.
Oh, yeah. Well, and now kind of just going up the card, we also had Dominic Cruz come back and take on Pedro Munhoz. And that fight was kind of like a super weird one because it was kind of the speed versus power kind of thing.
Right.
Because, you have Dominic Cruz who's not really, doesn't have a lot of power at this point in his career. I feel like he is a little bit slower, but he's still faster than a lot of these guys.
He's never been a big knockout artist, but he's always been known for his speed and his movement. Yeah. And it did look diminished.
Looked diminished, but it was still on par, I feel like, as far as like the bantamweight division. I just feel like after watching him for years, I can definitely see like where he's at, like in comparison to where he was in his prime. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And obviously that comes with all the injuries and everything he's been through. But this was a good win for him. I mean, early he got rocked. He showed that he was able to overcome adversity, came back in the fight, and won the last two rounds pretty convincingly.
I thought the fight was going to be a draw the way that Pedro was all over Dominic in the first round. He lit him up. Yeah. He knocked him down. I thought it was twice. And kudos to Dominic. He's very tough. He weathered the storm and came out and, really put it on him. There's no question that Dominic, in my mind, won the last two rounds. Yeah. And you're right. He didn't have that classic movement that we saw pre-injury.
Mm-hmm.
So many injuries.
Yeah.
But he handled, Munhoz is still a top 10 bantamweight. And he's very skilled, and he weathered that storm, and he came out with a win. And I thought he looked pretty good in that last half. But I ultimately thought it was going to be a draw. I thought we had a 10-8 first round for sure. And then, 10-9, 10-9 for Cruz.
Dude, you know who you should fight? You should run it back with Dillashaw. That would make sense right now. Dillashaw has nothing. He's the odd man out. And Cruz wants the belt. He said he wants to get back to the belt. That's what he said after the fight. He said that he's not doing this to just, be some gatekeeper. I'm here to try to fight for the belt again. I don't think so either. Especially after these last two wins he's had. Those are two real, tough guys in the whole bantamweight division. So,
Yeah, fuck and it. Dominic Cruz at his peak. We're saying he's not at his peak anymore. Him at his peak was the best 135-pounder on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not much to say he's fallen off a little bit. He can still definitely compete. And maybe he could win the title. I don't know.
Yeah.
Dillashaw is a mystery right now as far as I'm concerned. That whole division is murky with the Sterling situation and the interim, and who knows exactly what's happening. But Cruz is definitely a player. Aldo's a player.
Or Aldo Cruz, that'd be sick. That was remember they were supposed to do that years ago.
Yeah.
That was supposed to be the big, remember when they did that? They had Cruz fight DJ also. He beat DJ's ass. And then he was going to fight Aldo, and that's when all the knee injuries started happening and all that shit. It all went sideways. So, yeah, I'd like to see them revisit that. I wonder what would have
been with Cruz. Because, it makes sense when he doesn't move like he used to. He's had terrible knee injuries.
But neither does fucking Aldo.
Fasciitis, all that stuff.
Yeah. Makes sense, yeah. It's literally all, tendon and, lower leg injuries.
Mm-hmm. Shit, psychologically, he might even have a little bit of fear of moving like that around. I mean, who knows? He seems to be an incredibly mentally tough individual, but I mean,
yeah.
How could you not be a little hesitant about your fucking knees?
Maybe.
When you see everything that he's gone through.
Yeah. But yeah, I want to see him fight Aldo. That'd be sick.
You like that better than the crew? I don't think Dillashaw would take that fight. Dillashaw's going to be demanding.
You think Dillashaw's just going to sit out until things clear up?
I think it depends on what happens. I think Dillashaw might demand a interim title fight against...
We already have an interim title.
No, I mean, I think that would be defended.
Oh, yeah, that could happen.
I think that he might demand that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we'll see. It'll be an interesting time when he gets back from his injury.
Well, let's talk about the belt. Or, well, not the belt, but the... They were saying it was possibly a title eliminator between Ty Carr of France and Cody Garbrandt.
It's interesting that we're talking about a victory by Dominick Cruz, and now we're about to talk about a humiliating defeat to Cody Garbrandt when it was Garbrandt who originally unseated Cruz.
Yep.
And now here we are where Garbrandt has gone. I mean, what the fuck, bro?
I think he's like, what?
I mean,
one in five,
this is what I thought
six.
Would happen, but I'm still just as shocked when it happened. I'm just, Christ almighty. I mean, he got lit the fuck up.
He did.
Knocked down twice and TKO'd. In like, what, 22 seconds? It was, no, it was at the 3 minute and 21 second mark, so.
But still, it felt like 22
less
seconds
than
2 minutes.
I mean, 23 to 9 on the punches, 2 knockdowns, and it was brutal. He was all over him. Carr France gave him no respect. And I tweeted this after the fight, and I still think it holds true. You can't be 5 foot fucking 8 and muscular and try to cut down to 125 when you already have a weak chin and expect that you're going to, like, what do you think, you're fighting children?
Here's the problem, though. Here's the other thing. Although I do agree with that, I think these are the two factors in this fight that go into why Cody lost this fight. The weight cut could be part of it, but I think a lot bigger reason he lost this fight was he just didn't respect the level of fighter that Ty Carr of France is.
That's what I meant when I said, do you think you're fighting children? Do you think they're just these small, like, is he only,
well,
five,
not
six,
only that, I just mean, like,
a little
him,
man who can't fight or something?
Yeah, well, like, let's just go back into the week.
Savage.
At the press conference, he called him Steve, first of all, and then...
and he wasn't joking, was he? Did he really
no, he said, it like,
Steve?
Yeah, he's like, said, I'm fighting Steve first. Like, fuck is Steve?
When he was interacting with O'Malley.
Yeah.
With Sean.
Yeah.
Dude, he didn't want none of that smoke. Sean O'Malley would piece him the fuck off.
He would
bro.
Get faded, yeah. And then, it's
that.
Just, and then also in the press conference, he was like, we're only doing this fight because you begged for it. That's what he said to fucking Ty Carr of France, too. So it's like, he just wasn't, I feel like he was, and then he's like talking shit to O'Malley and all this shit at the press conference instead of like talking about his own fight. I know like the media guys asked about it, but he was like, he like even took jabs at him later in the press conference too.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, I just feel like his mind was not on this fight. His mind was on the next fight. And that's kind of his whole career lately has been like that. You know, he's always like calling for title shots and, you know, and then he picks up the big win against the Sun Tzu and then he wanted a title shot again.
And that was coming off 3 fucking losses. I mean, let's be honest, this guy has fallen apart since Dominick Cruz.
Yeah.
He gets the decision against Cruz. And I'm not trying to make excuses for Dominick. Dominick looked terrible in that fight. And it was revealed afterward that he had plantar fasciitis so bad, like he just couldn't move. He was just like, it was one of the first times we'd seen Cruz where he wasn't bouncing around. We're like, whoa, what's going on here? Whatever. It is what it is. You come to the fight, then that's what happened. But since then, it's 5 losses and the 1 win against the Sun Tzu.
Yeah.
And in those 5 losses, he's been KO'd, 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 decisioned, KO'd.
And in the Rob Font fight, he got fucked up, too. It wasn't like...
Which was the lone decision where he wasn't
knocked. Yeah, he got fucking beaten up. So, yeah, it's tough, man. It's hot out here.
What do you do when you can't compete, when you're the former champ, you can't compete in the top of your division anymore? So you make this ridiculous cut to 25. He'd have better luck than 25. I just don't understand these people that think they can. Do you know how small 125 pounds is?
Yeah.
Holy fucking
small.
Shit, dude. It's very small. And I'm not trying to besmirch these guys who are that size. But, bro.
It's small, yeah.
It's very little. Like.
For sure.
Fucking. If Cody's height is really 5'8", I mean, he's 1 inch shorter than me. And you've seen, like, me and, like, Kevin Gastelum together, right?
Yeah.
And I look taller than Kelvin Gastelum does.
Yeah.
And he's fighting at 185 pounds.
Yeah.
And this dude's trying to get down to 125. It's just like insane.
Like I told you,
to me,
I think
dude.
They're patting his stats on his height. I don't think he's that tall. I think it's like it was like when you go to the...
Oh, he looked a lot bigger than old boy.
It's like
old
when
boy
you go to
5'6".
The DMV and you write it in. I think that's what he did.
He could be. He's that guy. Right?
It could be.
Well, what does he do? Go to Bellator? I mean, I don't know what's
left on
his
contract. You think the UFC lets him go?
God damn, dude. Dude, he's 1-5 with four knockout losses. And he's not a draw. And who can... I mean, I don't know.
I mean, he is a draw, though.
Is he? I don't want to see him anymore because I don't like seeing guys take that kind of brain damage. Like, if you can't hang, you can't hang.
Yeah, I guess.
I'm not trying to be like, fuck him personally. I'm just, dude, if you can't do this at this level, you can't do this at this level. How many more times do we need to see it?
How
now you go down to 125 and those dudes are knocking you out at 25?
That's true. It's a good point.
Fuck, man.
Scroll up. I want to see what his age is. How old is he?
He was born in 91.
Which is what?
He's 30. 31 now. It's into 2022. Okay. 2021. I mean, he's somewhere in that age.
Yeah, I don't know, dude. It's kind of early to walk away. He's made a lot of money, though.
I'm sensing BKFC.
No, I wouldn't want to see that. If he's already got a soft... No, like, that, I wouldn't want to see that at all, actually.
Get lit up. He needs to.
It's not even about getting lit up. I'm just saying, like, if he doesn't have a chin with,
he doesn't have the chin.
Like, yeah, I don't know. I think he should go back to 35 and just chill there. It's not really like a situation where like, I think he'll be contending for a title anytime soon.
No.
But you know, he could rattle off some wins against some like guys who are at the lower levels of the top 15. Kind of be a gatekeeper if that's really what's gonna end up happening for a little bit. I mean, he can make a run, though, just like anybody. We've seen plenty of guys in the UFC who have, like, had real bad losing streaks and completely turned it around. Look at Charles Oliveira.
There's a difference, though, between a losing streak
and getting
KO'd,
yeah.
Like, repeatedly, even when you fix the hole supposedly in your game. Like, you can make the argument the first KOs were because he loses cool.
Yeah.
And get to winging with superior strikers who kept their cool, landed the right punches on him, but...
Yeah, true.
If either you can't fix that, or now, I mean, you get swarmed like that by a guy you got that much of a size advantage over. Regardless what the actual stats are in the cage, he was clearly much larger.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I'm just a hater, bro.
Well, no one's
I mean, I'm not like a fan of the guy. I don't dislike him, but I dislike all these fucking losses.
Yeah, they've been rough.
Manner, dude. They're just rough, dude. It's a fucking tough sport, and I don't. Sucks when you see boxers that are all old now from back in the day, and they're all befuddled and fucked up, man. And I don't want it, these guys. You know, you're still okay. You keep this up another fucking 2 years, you're gonna be a dumbass in fucking 10-15 years. No, I guess that sounds harsh, but
no, it's true though.
It's just it is, man. Like sometimes you got to take a hard look, like when Joe Rogan sat Brendan Schaub down because he kept getting knocked out silly.
Uh-huh.
It's like. Sometimes it's not like you're just losing. If you're just losing, you're losing. You lose decisions.
Yeah.
Whatever. You keep getting slept, man. It's just different in my mind.
Well, yeah, because then your brain just shuts off.
Yeah.
Like when it gets into that mode, you're just automatically getting KO'd. It happens to a lot of people.
And it's not like you get it back, usually. It's like,
yeah.
It's almost like you hit that wall or you flip that switch, whatever euphemism you want
to
use.
And that's the thing, though, is like if. Like, in a perfect world scenario, I feel like he has the offense to knock a lot of these guys out. But I feel like, defensively, he's not on par. He takes too many shots. Even in the fights he's won, like, he takes a lot of shots, you know? That's kind of been always his ML, though. You know, he was, like, fights fire with fire, but that just doesn't work forever.
That's a short shelf life.
Yeah.
You just can't do that kind of shit and expect to have a long career in this game, so... We'll see what he does, man. It might sound like I'm being harsh. I wish that man nothing but the best. That's why I'd like to not see him get knocked silly like this.
Yeah, it was pretty rough.
So, moving on up the card, I mean, we had pretty shocking fights as we move up the card.
Mm-hmm.
What stands out to you? Where you want to start?
Let's go to the co-main event. Juliana Pena pulls it out of her ass and beats Amanda Nunes. How about that?
She gets the rear naked choke, round two. After a first
after
round.
After she got beat down in the first round, man.
And Nunes, to me, and I mean zero disrespect to Juliana Pena, I'm just stating a fact. I thought Nunes looked like a completely different fighter in the second round. And she started throwing some of the sloppiest stand-up I've seen out of her maybe ever.
Mm-hmm.
I texted you in the middle of it. I was like, what the fuck? Nunes is looking so sloppy right now. This is crazy. Yeah. And then that ended pretty quick.
You know what, though? I do have to give Juliana Pena credit in this aspect on the feet. Was she did what she said she was going to do. She met Amanda with fire. Mm-hmm. She went fire. Like every single, like, especially in the second round, every single punch Amanda was throwing was met with another punch by her. Like they were throwing, and it was whether it was sloppy or not, like, you know what I mean. Like,
she
it
did
was
what
still
she had to
yeah.
do. Pena did what she had to do, which was realize what was going on and capitalize mm-hmm. on
exactly.
that mistake. That's what it's all about in competition, right?
Mm-hmm.
In heads up competition, and it's not always about what you do; it's about what your opponent does, and you being
yeah.
wise enough, and smart enough, and quick enough to capitalize on it. And she
exactly.
did that. And congratulations to her.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that's your girl. But
dude,
I don't think she wins in a rematch.
I don't know.
If Nunes is even serious about it. She has been
you
around
think,
a while. She might just be like, yeah, I'm done. I don't know. She has a kid now. Another title.
Yeah.
You know? But if she comes back. And
what if she does this? What if she defends the 45 belt and then fights her? Like, gets a warm-up fight and then fights her, basically.
That could be interesting, too.
Because I do wonder how much her being sick had to go into this. Because she just had zero gas tank whatsoever.
That's what I was going to say, too. She looked so tired. And she did, I think, have back-to-back COVID or something.
Yeah,
she had
something
COVID
like
once, for sure.
Yeah. This fight's been delayed, like, three times.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah. What a performance, though.
Congratulations to
Juliana
Pena.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah.
Way to back up what you said, regardless of.
The finish was a little weird as well.
She
was a quick tap. Real quick tap by Amanda.
Quick.
She didn't look like she wanted to get choked out whatsoever. She's like, let me get out of here. We'll do this again later. She wanted out.
Yeah. I don't know what to make of that whole thing. That was really bizarre.
Very bizarre. Because she didn't have it locked up for more than maybe a second.
Mm-hmm.
Like, she, like, tapped as she was locking it up. It was, like, a very strange sequence. Like, if you watch it in slow-mo, like, watch it a couple times. It's, like, literally, like, as she locks it in, she's like, I'm out. I'm done. Like, there wasn't much crank to it. There wasn't, like, it's pretty fucking quick, dude. At
usually
first,
fighters get crucified for that.
Dude, she
like,
had no
Connor
hooks
had
in.
That quick.
Dude, no hooks, no nothing. Like, she was just, like, standing on her back, basically, and fucking put her in a choke. It was strange.
That's
many people who have been better have been crucified for such. Yes, you were right.
I mean, Connor gets a lot of flack for tapping after a few seconds.
I think both of the taps Connor has had were pretty legitimate.
I like, thought they were.
Diaz
too.
Fucking had the body triangle and fucking had him in that shit. And then Khabib had him like in a neck crank against the cage. There's where was he gonna go?
Nowhere.
Nowhere. But that was a fucking iffy tap by Nunes. I was like, whoa.
That was pretty iffy, bro.
I don't know about that. It looked like she wanted out of there.
I guess we'll see how this plays out if she winds up.
Now,
this could
my
be a GSP
real...
St. Pierre,
yeah,
I mean, St. Pierre, a GSP Matt Serra
uh-huh.
situation where, yep, a legitimate win by the challenger, but then we see a champion come back and reassert themselves.
Or it could be a Rose Namajunas versus Joanna situation and Pena beats her again.
Mm-hmm. That'll really solidify Pena. I mean, as unfair as it might be, when you have such dominant champions such as Nunes, that's kind of what you have to do.
Yeah.
Is beat him twice in a row.
What if Juliana Pena just becomes dominant as fuck? Juliana Pena has more wins in that weight class than Amanda Nunes does.
I don't know.
That's real. Look it up.
I think she's a great fighter. It's just for some reason in the Ultimate Fighter, something about her just I was like, I don't like your attitude.
I like it.
I can't even remember why anymore. Just that I was like, I don't like her, and it's just stuck. I don't really have a reason. Like,
yeah.
But she's a good fighter. There's no doubt. She's very.
Like, if you look at their resumes, they're actually pretty similar, though. Because they came up from, like, that whole, like.
GDR loss.
No, she didn't lose it. She lost to Valentina.
Valentina Shevchenko.
Yeah. So they should run it back. And then Valentina could be double champ.
That'd be sick, too.
That'd be sick.
But Valentina's probably like, hey.
She's like, yeah, come on. Well, I'll do it. I'll move up.
It was a strange fight, but again, congratulations to Pena. We'll see what happens if we go the immediate rematch route or if we do something else. I mean, it's the first time that belt's been defended in 2 fucking years.
Yeah. Was it really? Yeah. So, what, since
Raquel we have to make allowances right? for 2020 in there as well.
Yeah,
but, although the UFC did put events on, but it was kind of hard for these international fighters at the beginning to get to them. And there's only so many spots in Fight Island, blah, blah, blah.
Blah, blah, blah.
And the 45 belt was defended in that time. So, it is what it is.
Yeah.
Interesting night, though, and a shocking, shocking upset.
Mm-hmm. Now let's move on to the main event. Another one where the tide turned and never turned back. So we had Dustin Poirier come out on fire against Charles Oliveira.
Yeah, it's really piecing him up in the first round. I mean, it's similar to the
Charles was game, though. He was throwing back. He landed some good shots on Dustin as well.
But Dustin was, like, dropping bombs.
So, yeah.
Like.
But he hit him with, like, 25 significant strikes in, like, the first 2 minutes or something
like
that.
He did. It was a shocking number in the first 2 minutes. I believe it was 25 in the first 2 minutes or 90 seconds. Then the second round was a completely different story.
Just got smushed.
He winds up getting subbed in the third. But let's talk about that first round, because we kind of see that in Charles Oliveira fights now, where he's getting fucking beat up.
These last three fights that happened. It happened in the Tony Ferguson fight, happened in the Michael Chandler fight, and now it happened in the Dustin Poirier fight. Like, how strange is that?
I mean, look, Oliveira's a big guy. He's bigger than a lot of these guys.
Yeah.
Which is odd since he's coming up from 45.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's a dangerous game to play, though, because you keep running out against guys that, like, got a left hand like Connor, you might not have a chance to take much more.
Well, if you look at both the fights, Chandler almost finished him, was like on the cusp
Chandler
of it.
Right there.
And then the same thing with Dustin. Dustin was like on the cusp of finishing him the other night as well. Dude, what the fuck was he doing in the second round?
What I was just going to say. That second round was, I mean.
Just weird.
That's the worst round I've seen from Dustin Poirier ever. Like, he gets taken down by Oliveira, and then he does absolutely nothing to get up.
Well,
he doesn't even put his feet on his hips. He doesn't do shit.
And then what are they, in between rounds, his coaches talk to DC and Joe and say that was part of the game plan. Like, how is that part of the fucking game plan? If that's part of your game plan, you don't have a game plan to win. Because what happened in the second round is a direct result of what happens in the third round.
Mm-hmm.
Like, literally.
Yeah.
It is, because he just smushed Dustin, hit him with some serious shots that, you know, hurt him pretty bad. I thought he was almost going to finish him on top, and then he ends up getting the sub in the third. So
yeah, I mean, he had three sub attempts, you know, legit sub attempts, and then
he hit him with some big shots up top, though, with those elbows. I was like, Jesus Christ.
Oliveira?
Yeah.
Yeah, he was
he's beating his ass.
Dustin, who just laid there.
Just took it.
And, I mean, what sometimes tried to get a body triangle on him and hug up, and that was about it. And Dustin said afterwards that he didn't want to risk Oliveira taking
back.
His back. But, I mean.
Then he gets choked off.
I mean, if you put your feet on his hips, do you really risk him taking your back? If you're just trying to shove him off of you? Like, really?
I mean, I know Charles is slick, but I don't know if he's
that slick.
Yeah, like that.
It's not like Poirier's not a black belt in jiu-jitsu.
Dude, he's got PTSD from the Khabib fight, because that's what happened in the Khabib fight. Remember, he let Khabib take his back, and then he fucking choked his dumb ass out too.
Could be. He'd be fucking with people.
He's got PTSD, so it happened. That's what happened for sure. Because that literally makes no fucking sense.
I was convinced he was injured.
Yeah.
I remember talking to you, and you thought so too. I mean,
like, maybe he broke his hand or something when he hit him.
Like, something's wrong here. Like, clearly Dustin's hurt. He's not fighting. He's not doing anything.
But he's like, nope, that's the game plan, brother. I'm like, huh? The fuck?
It's kind of like that same nonsense that Conor tried to say after the first Khabib loss.
Yeah.
They're like, no, I was just, we figured if he took me down, we'd just
tire
him out. Yeah. That's a terrible plan, bro.
Yeah, no, that's not a good idea.
So then the third round comes out, and Oliveira takes
it. It was all Oliveira. It was over.
Very interesting. I thought Poirier was likely to get the win here.
So what do you think's next? Justin Gaethje?
Yeah, they're going to do Gaethje next, I'm pretty sure. And look, that's another firefight I don't know if you want to fuck with in the same manner. Like, how many times can he come out and just get lit up in the first round?
In the same breath, after we watch what Khabib did to Justin, if you're Charles Oliveira, why don't you just take Justin down and sub him? Because it doesn't seem like he's been focusing on his wrestling or grappling whatsoever.
Yeah, I'm no longer a believer in the Justin Gaethje wrestling myth. I know he was.
That's the thing, though. Yeah, it's something.
It's this thing that he's got this wrestling game in MMA that we're just, one day, we're not. He's at the, it's like three quarters.
I mean, maybe it's better now because Usman is over there now, but I don't know.
I'd love for him to shut me up and land a takedown.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Please. I don't know what the fuck happened there.
I don't know what happens in that fight. Gaethje Oliveira is very interesting. We'll see.
Yep. Where do you think Dustin Poirier goes from here? You think him and Conor run it back? Probably what's going to end up happening.
It's so hard to say. I have so many questions about Conor.
Yeah.
I mean, have you seen his size lately on social media?
He's like 376 pounds.
Right. He's Brock McGregor.
That's what he looks like.
Oh, but for real, he looks like Tyron Woodley is who he looks like. And he claims to be weighing 190 pounds, and he looks like he's weighing 190 pounds. Yeah. And we don't mean he grew a pot belly. Like, dude has been lifting.
Yeah, he looks ridiculously big. Like, stupid.
Yeah.
I don't know if it was very smart of him, though.
I don't know what. I mean, it just depends on what his goals are.
Yeah, I guess.
I mean, he talks about going up and fighting Usman a lot, and we all laugh at him at welterweight. But if that's his welterweight body, that's a different game. I don't even know what that is.
There's too much grappling at 170. He would be fucked.
Conor has decent grappling. Everybody shits on his grappling. He's got good grappling.
No, I know, but I'm talking like at the top of the division, like Colby Covington or freaking... Or Usman? No, I'm sorry. I can't see that happening.
I don't even want to see Conor do this shit anymore, man. Go box or something, bro. We'll fight Jake Paul.
Might as well at this point.
Fucking, you're big enough now, 190 pounds.
Dude, that's a big comeback.
I don't know. The division's in a weird spot, but Oliveira looked.
I think Poirier and Chandler makes a lot of sense.
I don't know. Poirier is. I don't think he fights Conor again. What the hell does he have to gain with a third Conor fight?
Nothing.
It would be like, why would Weidman fight Anderson Silva again?
Yeah, true.
You know, like, you could see why Silva would want it. Why the fuck would Weidman do it?
Yeah.
Why would he? I mean, I guess it's a payday, yes, but you know, he's got a couple paydays, he's got businesses, he's got a charity, and he gets paid pretty decent anyways, I'm gonna assume.
Yeah.
And unless he's getting that pay-per-view revenue, he's not getting some astronomical payday. It's not like they give him a different base salary. Mm-hmm. It only comes on the pay-per-view end. And you could be like Cowboy when he fought Conor, and guess what? He didn't get no pay-per-view points.
Yeah. Just got knocked the fuck out.
He got knocked the fuck out. He got the same base salary that he always got, and there was no red panty night, despite everybody thinking he got one.
Yeah.
So it's not these things. So I don't know. I don't know if that's allure enough for Dustin to be like, yeah, I'll do it again.
Yeah, that's why I like him and Chandler.
Yeah, it makes more sense. I guess if he's going to try to get back to that title. He's going to have to mentally. Fuck.
That would suck if Chandler lost that fight, though. 0-3 in the UFC. Oh, wait, no. He won his first fight. I'm sorry. He'd be 1-2.
Yeah, he's 1-2 right now.
Yeah, it's only 1-3. That'd be tough.
Be a prestigious 1-3, though.
Dude,
it'd be hard
yeah.
to say he's still not top.
His strength of schedule
six.
Is fucking top of, like, top of the food chain.
And I mean, I think he was closer than Poirier to winning that title. I mean, I thought they could have stopped that Oliveira fight.
Yeah.
Oliveira,
Chandler. Yeah.
And I didn't think we quite got there in the Poirier, but I thought he might go to sleep soon if he kept that up.
Well, yeah, true. Even, dude, that freaking Gaethje Chandler fight also was like a fucking ridiculous fight. Ridiculous fight.
So you think that, the fucking Oliveira would engage in that nonsense or try to fight him like Nurmagomedov? We'll end the segment with that.
I don't think he entertains it. I don't know though, because Charles, like we were talking about before, it's his whole first round feel out thing. He did the same thing against Tony Ferguson. Tony Ferguson beat him up pretty bad in the first round of the first fight too. And then he came back and beat the dog shit out of Tony Ferguson.
It's such a dangerous game.
Like, kind of seems like that's what he does. But if it's Justin Gaethje, he should not entertain it, in my opinion.
It's never a good idea with Gaethje. Gaethje, I think, has more power than... You think Gaethje has more power than Poirier? He certainly got more knockouts. But...
No. I'd say they're about even. Because I've seen them in a firefight, and Poirier was the one who came out on top.
This is true. Well, it's a great fight, though.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good night of fights on UFC Delivered on this final pay-per-view of the year.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoyed the whole card.
Absolutely.
Oh, with the exception of the egregious eye gouges, I didn't really find much to complain about. You know, even Joe, the commentary wasn't that bad. Joe Rogan was doing a real good job, I thought, of explaining positions.
Yeah, and the Ryan Hall, Derek Minor fight.
Yeah, he did that a few times through the night, you know.
Yeah.
He kind of reined in DC a little bit. Like, there was at one point when DC and Anik were doing story time that Rogan actually interrupted and was like, we need to talk about this thing that just happened in the fight, guys. Sorry, but
yeah,
I appreciate that.
Mm-hmm. I like that.
I did too. And I think that wraps up the UFC 269. And speaking of wrapping it up, I want to fire up this other fucking pre-roll here. Keep going with these miracle alien cookies. And let's move on to the next segment.
Well, let's talk about some BKFC. So,
Bare Knuckle Fighting Championships with some new shit for us, man.
Yep. Out in Thailand now.
And it's not just an event in Thailand. It's BKFC Thailand event number one,
mm-hmm.
which is a like separate
subsidy.
Entity.
Yeah.
Yeah. Subsidy. Can't say it. I'm
I
too
don't
high.
Know. Whatever.
Subsidy. Subsidy. Yeah. Whatever. It's a sister company under the same banner, different CEO. And this is a very exciting event. I'm actually really, really, really stoked about this move by Bare Knuckle into Thailand, which is a completely different culture than here in the United States, where the bare knuckle fighting is still looked at as some kind of like novelty or extremely barbaric type of fighting. But in Thailand, they've had Muay Thai fighters for hundreds of years, either going bare knuckle or just wrapping a little rope around their fucking hands and duking it out. And I'm very curious how the culture absorbs the BKFC events there, as well as seeing these Muay Thai fighters who, unlike boxers in America, they are used to these clinch fights. They are used to clinch striking, and they're used to being punched in the clinch, which you do see in MMA as well, although in MMA you're worried about the takedown from the clinch.
Yeah.
You know, so it changes your defense,
mm-hmm.
where in Muay Thai kickboxing, they're not taking anybody down. You're strictly being held and being struck. So I'm very, very, very excited about this move by BKFC into Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
This event is going to be December 18th. It's going to be at Pattaya Exhibition and Convention Hall, also called The Peach. It looks like a really, really beautiful Royal Cliff Hotel.
Mm-hmm.
Very prestigious area. It looks like it's taking place in And for this event, they held a series of tryouts, which I recommend everybody checks out on YouTube. It's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
What, it was in three cities, Bangkok.
I think it was Phuket, and then...
I think I'm saying that right. I might be mispronouncing it. If I am, somebody will correct me in the comments.
You
can take this.
But yeah, no, it's interesting what they're doing. So they're bringing like a lot of different athletes in from like other combat sports that are in the area, and kind of all like put them all through a series of like tests and like games and all kinds of shit. And then now they're all on the card, almost kind of like an Ultimate Fighter kind of thing.
Yeah, they went to some pretty big fight camps like Tiger Muay Thai, Venom. And they're getting seasoned fighters who might be new to bare knuckle boxing, but most of them have either some bare knuckle experience, all of them have combat sports experience. Mm-hmm. And like I was just saying, it's not just USA boxing. There's the CEO is a former MMA fighter, Nick Chapman, and honestly, we're really hoping to get him on the show here in the future. We've been talking to a lot of the guys from BKFC and this BKFC Thailand event. We're supposed to have the headliner, TJ Chang, on. Just ran into some scheduling conflicts where we couldn't get him on in time for today's episode, but we're going to look to do that afterwards. And like you said, they brought in fighters from all over the place, including some with an incredible amount of experience. So before we get up to the headliners, let's talk a little bit about some of these other fighters on here. Like, there's a gentleman by the name of Reza Gudari, I think that's how you pronounce his name, who has an absolute wealth of combat sports experience. Mm-hmm. There's another guy on the card who has 205 bare knuckle fights in karate competitions, right?
Mm-hmm.
We've got, let's talk about Gudari for a second.
He has 205 fights.
Okay, yeah, he's got full contact karate, 205 fights. He's 103-5, so 208.
Yeah.
He's also fought in Muay Thai, in Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu, in boxing, and something called Yang Mudo. Not sure what that is. And he took medals in the World Martial Arts Mastership.
Yeah, he has two bronze medals in the Olympics as well.
These are seasoned fighters that they're bringing in. There's another guy. I'm really, really not sure how to say his name, so I'm probably going to butcher it a little bit. But his last name looks like Singmanasak. All right, but he has got an extensive combat sports victory too. He's 97-5 in professional boxing over in Thailand. So, and he didn't start losing fights until lately. Yeah, like his last six, he's 3-3,
mm-hmm.
and he's only got five losses and 97 wins. So,
yeah.
I like the way that they're doing this over there. Instead of bringing in some USA fighters, you know, they're bringing in international fighters and Thailand natives,
because
there's a really wide mix of people who live in Thailand and who like that culture there, and especially in the fight culture.
Yeah, for sure, for sure.
So this first event is this Saturday. You can get it on the BK TV app, which is like $5 a month. We don't get a promo code for that. I'm just telling you, as a fight fan, everybody listening, you should sign up for that and check it out. But let's talk a little bit about the main event. TJ Chang is now facing a replacement fighter. He was scheduled to fight Fabiano Hawthorne, who was an MMA fighter. But Fabiano ruptured a tendon in his biceps. And so another fighter on the card, I think his name is pronounced Kaban, his last name is Soleimani.
Mm-hmm.
He got moved up to the main event. This is a big difference for TJ Chang, who we'll talk about in a second, because Kaban Soleimani is a Tiger Muay Thai fighter.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, he just had a Muay Thai fight in early November, which he won. And he's going to be bringing in a lot of different looks than a guy that's coming from an MMA background.
Yeah.
And so I'm curious how TJ, who's coming over from basically from pro boxing and street fighting, frankly, which we'll talk about in a second, right, how he reacts to the Muay Thai plume from a guy like Soleimani, who's going to have a lot of experience in using that.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts on that?
I think it's going to be tough to see, because coming from his like boxing background, obviously, I don't think he's necessarily. That's what I feel like has always been the difference in like BKFC, at least in America so far. That's like, is people who are able to control that, like that the plume you're talking about, like they're usually the ones who are finding a lot of success. So I wonder if, coming from that Muay Thai background, if he's gonna institute that a lot like early in the fight, or is he gonna, you know, because you could also use that to control your opponent defensively also, you know. And it's pretty fucking hard when someone's cutting the ring pretty much in half and like exactly. all up in your face before, you know, naturally the ref would break that up in a boxing match, and in this that's encouraged.
So that was one of the things I was looking forward to asking TJ, and you know, we're rooting for him here on the show this weekend. So hopefully with a victory, we'll be able to talk to him afterwards. But I'm curious how much living there in Thailand, because he's from the UK, right? But he's lived in Thailand for over a decade now, to my understanding. And he didn't move there originally for the fighting game. Like, he was a boxer, and he was in the Navy, boxed in the Navy. And then he moved to Thailand for the culture because he really liked it. And he took like 3 years off from fighting and then started getting back into it a little bit and feeling it. And then had a bare knuckle bout in the really hot sun. It was kind of a bizarre place to have a bare knuckle bout in like a 95 degree sun.
Uh-huh.
And he thinks it's a 4-round fight, and he gasses himself at the end of the 4th round, comes out for the 5th, and he's just completely gassed and he loses the fight. And then after that, it seemed to have sparked a real desire in him to return to what he knows, how good he knows that he is.
Yeah.
While he does have a lot of, you know, a decent amount of boxing experience, he brings a different thing to bare knuckle with his street fighting experience. He's a guy who claims to, and I have no reason to doubt him, have over 200 street fights, to the point where he feels more comfortable bare knuckle than he feels gloved up.
Sounds dope.
Absolutely. I mean, that's the exact opposite of what we see here in most cases, where you have guys, especially if they're boxers, who've had these big gloves in front of their face, where you can do the turtle, you can shell up, you know, you can do all these things, you can block punches with them, and you just can't do that in BKFC, where now we've got a guy who's like, I don't like these big-ass gloves on my fucking hands.
Right.
Now he feels comfortable in the bare knuckle scene. So I'm really excited by this. I'm hoping TJ is able to get the victory here. Look, he's real technical. He's got thick hands. I'm hoping he comes in and gets a real solid victory. Like, if you watch the tryouts, TJ looked just really good. Mm-hmm. He looks really good working on the bag. He's a character. He's a party guy. He's very animated. I think he'd be a great ambassador, so to speak, for BKFC Thailand. We'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm.
Card is also filled with, I just really top to bottom, quality fighters.
Yeah, a lot of people with a lot of, like, tons of different mixed martial arts and, like, Muay Thai and kickboxing backgrounds that are just trying their hand at, like, bare knuckle.
And we've got solid fight camps behind these guys, too.
Oh, yeah,
You know, TJ is fighting out of Venom. Over there, Soleimani's representing Tiger Muay Thai, and there's several other fighters from good, solid camps. You could really see that in the tryouts when they were going to these cities, that these guys were getting, you know, good, solid training.
Yeah.
I don't know, people who've never been to Thailand, you might have this picture in your head that, you know, it's like third world country all over the place or something, and it's not. It was very modern areas, and these guys over there are just steeped in the fight culture, and I'm very excited to see where this goes.
Mm-hmm. I second that.
And hopefully, here in the upcoming episodes, depending on how this end of the year stuff works out, we're going to get TJ on, maybe some of these other fighters on the next BKFC Thailand card coming up as well, because we want to stay on top of this and follow this promotion as it spreads out. Exciting times ahead for bare knuckle boxing.
All right, now to finish out the year, we have the final UFC fight night out of the Apex Center between Derek Lewis and Chris Daukaus.
Yeah, so we had the final pay-per-view last week, final show, the final fight night of the year.
Coming up.
I really hope it's the final fight at the Apex Center, Paul.
I hope so, too.
I think most fans would agree that we're all kind of tired of this. I know it's great for the UFC's bottom line, but it's not helping in the fan department at all.
No.
That it was kind of cool in the beginning. You could hear the punches land.
Well, and also, like, with with that, it also like takes more fan experience away if you really think about it. Absolutely. The whole part of those fight nights is they're usually like a little cheaper option for fans to go see some good fights. You know what
right.
I mean?
You and I caught a fight night at the Pearl.
Yeah, it was sick.
I mean,
so I hope, but we'll see.
Please let's stop with that and bring the fan experience. It's also nice to hear a real crowd.
Yeah.
I mean, part of it of fighting is, you know, they come out, everybody yells. Mm-hmm. It's an exciting thing. So
yeah,
we'll see. But this is actually a good card coming from the Apex Center. I mean, mm-hmm. it's headlined with the heavyweight showdown between Derek Lewis and Chris Daukaus.
Daukaus coming off a real big win against Olenek. Lewis coming off his unfortunate loss in his title eliminator.
Zero gain.
Gone. Or yeah. I guess it was the interim fight.
Interim title thing. Whatever. Yeah. Nonsense. But
well, like a title.
Wasn't
eliminated.
A good fight for Derek Lewis. He's got his hands full here with Chris. He's a solid fighter.
Yeah.
That guy's pretty impressive.
This is a big step up in competition for Chris, though, at the same time.
Yeah. No, he's fucking with the. Like, it's fun to joke about Derek Lewis, but he's a very talented fighter.
Oh, yeah.
You know, he's a serious man in the cage. And I'd expect him to get to victory here if he's feeling good. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of it has to do with how he feels personally with his back. I know he has issues. And sometimes that holds him up in fights where he's just kind of lethargic looking. I don't think that's necessarily Derek Lewis being lazy. I think that's Derek Lewis's back is probably on fire.
Yeah.
But he's not one to really talk about that too much. Just my opinion. But yeah, that's actually a great fight. But I think you're a little more excited about the co-main event, aren't you?
Yeah, I don't know how this one's flown under the radar like this. But we got Bilal Muhammad taking on Wonderboy Thompson.
And
a real big fight for me. I think that could have been on last week's pay-per-view.
That's some serious implications in this fight. I mean,
Wonderboy
is in need of a win over a quality competitor, and even more so if you're Bilal Muhammad, mm-hmm. after his Leon Edwards
weird thing happened.
You know, it wound up being a no contest with the eye pokes, and he tried real hard to get that rematch, and Edwards was like, nah.
But honestly, I think Stephen Wonderboy Thompson is just as big of an opponent as far as, like, if he gets a win here, that's just as big of an opponent as Leon.
Well, it's probably even bigger in the scope of things because people know who Wonderboy is.
Yeah, people.
Leon Edwards can't even get a fight. I mean, it's kind of funny, but it's also kind of sad. Yeah. Like, I mean, this dude's on this ridiculous win streak. No one cares that he can't fight. No one knows who he is. No one's clamoring for title shots.
So I think he should have gave Bilal the rematch.
Yeah, it would have been better off for him. But that's neither here nor there when we've got Wonderboy Thompson. It's kind of weird to keep calling him Wonderboy when he's like
40. Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, he's coming off that loss to Gilbert Burns in a fight that was pretty close as well. But he needs a big win here.
He does. If he wants to stay relevant in the welterweight division and avoid the gatekeeper status at his age. And he definitely, he's 38. He's not quite 40.
I mean, he really doesn't have that many losses. It's just they're it's happened later in his career.
No, he's only got 5 losses.
Yeah.
16-5 with the one draw.
Yeah.
Against Woodley in the title fight, right? God, those were terrible fights too.
The first one was better.
It was better. And he's got some advantages here over Bilal Muhammad, despite being 5 years older. He's got a height advantage, 6'5", 5'9". He's got a nice reach advantage, 3 inches, you know, 75 inches to 72.
Yeah.
And when you're someone like Wonderboy who strikes at range, I'd be curious what his leg length is, too. I really wish the UFC would start putting that statistic out there like a lot of other MMA promotions are doing, but he has very long legs and he's a very rangy striker from the outside, which when you're looking at that, a 1.5-inch difference on each fucking arm in arm length actually impacts the fight.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm curious to see if Bilal Muhammad can get inside.
Well, yeah, because that's a big part of his game, too, is closing that distance and throwing the like a lot of close, big punches. That's kind of a big part of Bilal's game, and mm-hmm. if Wonderboy is able to keep him on the outside, he could end up just picking him apart.
It'll be a great fight. I think that's probably low-key fight of the night.
I think there's a few on here that could be real good. Like, let's just go a little bit further down. We got Rafael Sanzao taking on Ricky Simone.
Dude, that's a good fight for Ricky Simone.
Yeah.
I mean, he's a little under the radar, too. You talk about that. I mean, he's fucking 18-3.
Mm-hmm.
Sanzao, he's been around for a little while, but he's still dangerous.
He's still always dangerous, yeah.
That's... You know, bantamweight is ridiculous. Mm-hmm. So that's a low key contender for fight of the night too. But I don't know. I'm feeling an epic performance coming from Wonder Boy. That's what my bones tell me.
You think so?
I do.
I feel like Wonder Boy has those like every other fight. Like, every other fight he has like when you think he's out, like when he fought Vicente Luque, and he just like came out and just looked like old school Wonder Boy and mm-hmm. picked him apart. I was just like, this guy ever gonna go away? Like,
I thought he was gonna lose that fight. I did frankly, too, but it really turned me around on him. Like, man, mm-hmm. all right, guy.
Yeah,
you're still right there in the mix. Mm-hmm. Nicest guy in MMA out there. Mm-hmm. It's so funny. I mean, he's such a bad motherfucker, and he's like the cheesiest, smarmiest, nicest guy.
Oh yeah,
out there with his dad.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry, sir, for knocking you silly. Jesus loves you. Let me help you up. Sorry, Thompson's awesome, man. I don't know who I even want to win that fight, honestly, because I feel like Bilal Muhammad brings some new blood to the division, mm-hmm. where Thompson's been hanging around forever, and I like that. So we'll just see. I don't really have a dog in this fight, I guess.
Taking Stephen Wonderboy Thompson.
I mean, I would imagine he's the favorite here.
Yeah. Who are you taking in that bantamweight fight?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with Ricky Simone. I think he's going to pull it off.
I think it's best for the division if Ricky Simone pulls it off, just to add another guy in there.
Mm-hmm.
So another big one on that card, we also have Cub Swanson taking on Darren Elkins.
Look, Cub Swanson's been on a bit of a downturn lately. He's not getting easy out here. Darren Elkins is tough as nails.
Yeah.
And this is the other contender, I think, strong contender for fight of the night. Is you've got an action fighter in Cub Swanson, and you've got a fighter in Darren Elkins that takes large amounts of damage and is never out of a fight and then finds a way to win.
Yeah.
So we could really see some fireworks there.
Mm-hmm.
I like both those guys a lot. But
me too.
And Cub's old school. I'd like to see him get a win. I don't know how many fights he's got left on his contract. Or what that situation is at all, but I mean, he's out of the division picture.
Yeah, more or less. Yeah, you're right.
I mean,
both these guys kind of have like a little bit of a downturn, but they're the type that like they have a downturn, but then they'll win like two, and then they'll lose one, and then they'll win like one, and then lose three, and then win two, and then you know what I mean? Like mm-hmm. it's always a weird swing with those two guys.
Well, it's sure to be a banger. I mean, mm-hmm. Cub always brings it.
Yeah,
but sure. Darren Elkins sometimes it's cliche to talk about guys who take damage and find ways to win, but I mean, he really, really every fight it seems to be that way for him. At some point, it just like wakes him up.
Yeah,
and he starts kicking ass, bleeding all over the place.
It's true. Well, another fight that's flying under the radar in this card is we got Raquel Pennington taking on Macy Chason.
Ooh. That's a tough fight.
It's on the prelims.
Dude, I like Raquel Pennington. She's from my hometown, Colorado Springs, still fighting out of there.
Mm-hmm.
I've always been a supporter.
Yeah, I like Raquel. She's dope.
And I'd like to see her get the win here. Macy's been... Well, she had a lot of hype on her coming out of The Ultimate Fighter, but it's just hasn't really materialized yet.
Yeah. I think she's still, like,
she's pretty
developing.
Raw.
Yeah.
She's pretty raw.
Mm-hmm. Even coming out of The Ultimate Fighter, it was that way, too.
She's but not yeah. getting an easy matchup here. Raquel.
Raquel's tough.
I mean, that was she fought for the title, obviously, against Nunes. And she's one of these fighters where Raquel's record really isn't indicative of her skill level. Like, you might look at her record and go, she's not that good, but she is a very, very talented fighter.
Yeah.
And I expect her, frankly, to get the win here against Macy, who's just, I don't think, up on that level yet.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
In that division, Raquel is up near the top, in my mind. I don't think she's winning the title anytime soon, but she's not losing to Macy, Jason. No,
I don't think so either.
Not this weekend.
Not this weekend. Not it. Well, I think that about wraps it up.
Absolutely. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will see you next week, which will be our final show of the year and also our annual year-end awards show.
Yes, sir.
Hoping to get a few of the BKFC fighters on there if schedules are permitting to. If you're brand new, you can catch us on all major podcast outlets, including video on YouTube. We've taken a whole bunch of links and a bunch of other stuff and put it together in one location for you.
SwapMade.com, where you can head over there, click the gear button, support the podcast.
Thanks, everybody.
And follow us on Instagram at SwapMade Podcast.
Peace.
Peace.